Thanks so much for joining us today here on WPR News. Larry Mueller, and we're turning our attention from honey to wine, although I think honey may play a role in some of the wine that you may be drinking from time to time. Philippe Coquard back with us. He's president and winemaker at Wallersheim Winery and Distillery in Prairie du Sac. He's from the Beaujolais region of France originally, and comes from a winemaking family. Philippe, it's great to have you back. Welcome.
C'est me, Larry. What a pleasure to be on your show again.
Oh, it's great to have you here, as as it is to have Céline Coquard-Leonards as the head winemaker at Wallersheim Winery now, and, of course, Philippe's daughter. Céline, great to have you with us.
Thanks so much for having us.
Well, it's great to have you both here. And as we talk with our experts, I hope you'll join in. Want to hear from you. Let us know which Wisconsin wines are your favorite, or maybe you have a question about wine. Or maybe you've got some grapes of your own growing at home and you have questions about those grapes. Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Céline, let's turn to you first. You've got a new role at Wallersheim. You're the head winemaker. What does that title mean?
So I am looking at all of our wines from start to finish. So basically when the bottles get to our homes. So that means out in the vineyard more with Philippe, my dad. And it also means making those decisions of what wines we're going to make, from which fields, how we're making them, the yeast that we're choosing, how sweet we want them to be after fermentation, how we plan to age them, whether that's in the tank, in the bottle, in the barrel, and when those wines are ready to be bottled and shared with everybody.
So from one end to the other, and I am expecting that you've kind of prepared for this role for a long time. Talk about that.
Yeah, like any family business, it is a lifelong adventure. Really, officially, I originally thought I wanted to go into medicine, so that's not... I ended up somewhere different. But I started in horticulture at UW-Madison and then realized I loved fermentation science and sensory perception and got really interested in the winemaking after working in the vineyard for quite a few years. But even just growing up before I realized what I wanted to do as an adult, I spent all those meals growing up tasting wine, drinking wine, but not just wine, food too. The experience of tasting different foods, whether it's fruits, vegetables, and also being outside. We spend a lot of time out in the garden and out in the yard, and the smell of fresh cut grass, or, you know, when you put a little piece of grass in your mouth and chew on the end of it, all those flavors are kind of a way of building up that wine library as a young person going into winemaking.
Yeah. And Philippe, you know, it's been a while since you've been on, unfortunately. I think it'd be worth it to talk a little bit about the history of Wallersheim Winery and how you got involved in it as well.
Yeah, sure. My pleasure. So Wallersheim Winery is 35 minutes northwest of Madison. It is a very historic winery. The site was founded in 1847. The grape growers in 1852 came from Germany, built the winery that we still use, the cellar, and we use the old winery like we have for 50 years as Wallersheim Winery. Grapes were grown on site until the Prohibition. The grapes were Native American grapes such as Concord, Catawba, Delaware, Niagara. Sometime around 1876, they made brandy to increase the alcohol content of the Native American grapes. 1919, Prohibition happened and everything closed down. as an old winery until 1972, when my wife's parents, my in-laws, Bob and Joanne Wollersheim, bought the property and restarted everything from scratch, growing French-American hybrids that can take 25 below zero. And later on, sometime in the 80s, late 80s, we started to grow Wisconsin hybrids, Minnesota hybrids, which are thriving in this cold climate. And today we grow 30-some acres on site. We have a lot of grapes custom grown in Wisconsin. Just to close the loop, and it was so interesting, Larry, to connect with you guys, because I remember you interviewing Bob and I in the early days. And for a while, it was me by myself. And then I thought, why, it would be a blessing to introduce Celine to the world of radio and you know, kind of closing the loop. And I've been the winemaker for 40 years, and Celine has been with us over 12 years. And as an employee, as a kid, many more years. So it's a natural evolution of the business that she becomes the winemaker and I spend more time in the vineyard and so on. But it's a joy to see her thrive in what she loves to do.
Yeah, it's got to be a real joy to you and thrill, as a matter of fact. Jeremy in Manitowoc has a question for Celine, I believe. Let's go there. Hi, Jeremy.
Hey, so my question for Celine is, now that you're the head winemaker, are there any Wisconsin varietals that you want to work with or maybe add or replant in your vineyard to, you know, to do your own thing and move forward? Anything that that's different than what you guys are doing now?
Thanks, Jeremy. That's a great question. Last year, we planted two new varietals, both Wisconsin-Minnesota hybrids, the Crimson Pearl and Petite Pearl. So in the next few years, once they're mature enough to start harvesting, then we'll be experimenting with some different wines out of those. We just in the last year, we've been adding some new wines. We have a Marquette Rosé that we call the Garden Rosé, and that's a dry rosé. That's been a different one for us. That's our first 100% Marquette wine. And then I also started the Locale, which is made with 100% La Crosse, another Wisconsin hybrid. So I'm really focusing on using some of the Wisconsin hybrids as we're phasing out of, like, Chardonnay. We're replacing it with St. Pepin. That's we grow here. So varietals that are harder to get with travel across the United States, like what we're custom growing in Washington State, we've been slowly transitioning to more Wisconsin varietals.
And you've had a great relationship, Philippe, with Wisconsin products, Wisconsin farmers, and so forth for many a year.
Yeah, many years. I mean, you know, this Wisconsin is our home. It's our roots. We use Wisconsin oak barrels in the wines, in the bourbon, in the brandy, locally grown product. Our son Roman at the bistro is using lots of locally grown ingredient. Flour for the bread is all locally grown. And just promoting Wisconsin as a great state to do business, a great state to make outstanding wines. And so that's been our a sense of provenance. You know, cultivating our roots has been a goal of ours.
When you mentioned the barrels, the oak barrels, I remember you telling me a great story about being told that, no, you couldn't make barrels out of oak. And you said, Oh, yes, you will.
Oh, yeah. I'm the guy paying the bill, so yes, you will. You will make Wisconsin oak barrels.
It is a great story. Nick emailed us, thanks for the show about wine. Nick says his claim to fame is he was the very first truck driver to deliver Wallersheim, delivering a few pallets of empty bottles that would eventually contain brandy. What hybrid cold climate varieties does Wallersheim make wine out of, such as Foch, Marquette, Petit Pearl, St. Croix?
So thanks, Nick. That is really neat to hear that you were the first delivery. That's so cool. We grow Maréchal Foch, Leon Mieux, Marquette, Crimson Pearl, and Petit Pearl, but Foch is really our main red here. We also have St. Pepin, La Crosse, and I'm missing something.
Brianna.
Thank you. Brianna.
There you go. Thanks, Nick, for calling. You can join in too, by the way. The number to call, 800-642-1234. Or like Nick, you could email us to talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mieler for WPR News. Great to have you along today as we talk wines, grapes, and winemaking with our two guests today, Philippe Coquart, president and winemaker at Wallersheim Winery and Distillery in Prairie du Sac, Wisconsin. Celine Coquart-Zenners is the head winemaker at Wallersheim Winery. Talking wine with them, and if you want to join in, the number's 800-642-1234. We'll get you on pretty quickly, or email to talk@wpr.org. Let's take a question from or a comment from Ramsey in Fish Creek. Hi, Ramsey.
Hey, I'm just wondering, we have all these wineries up here, but they're all fruit wineries, and we're the same latitude as some great wineries in Washington State, for instance. But maybe it's a progression thing. We don't know what we're doing up here. But most of the wines up here are, unless you're the sweet wines, they're awful. There's nothing.
There's not a lot of imagination. It sounds like that's Ramsey's comment. Philippe, to turn to you first.
Yeah. So, I mean, Wisconsin is by far not the easiest place to grow grapes because of the limited choice we have for a cultivar. So when we talk West Coast, California, Oregon, Washington, even some places in Michigan, Wisconsin cannot grow the Pinot Noir, the Pinot Grigio, the Chardonnay, the Gewurz, and the Malbec, and so on. So we have to rely on grapes that can take cold winter. And there are a lot of those grapes. There are a lot of fruit wine. There are a lot of sweet wine. But, you know, that's a personal taste. It's a personal choice. Being a grape wine advocate, if it's well made, it has the right balance, the right taste, and doesn't have any flaws like vinegar or too light or out of balance. It's about the quality of the product, the quality of the wine. So we are encouraging everybody to consume Wisconsin made wine. It doesn't matter the color, the brand, and so on. Let's support Wisconsin growers, and there's a lot of choice. So in our opinion, it's going the right direction.
Yeah, and do you know off the top of your head how many wineries there are in the state? There's got to be quite a number. Celine, do you know, or Bob?
Yeah. We're about over 120 right now.
Wow.
And Larry, there were When I came on board in 1984 in the state of Wisconsin, I think we had 8 wineries. And in the 90s, it was like 25-ish. And then after that, it exploded. And not only in Wisconsin, but nationwide. Nationwide from, let's say, 2000 to today, the number of wineries has quadrupled in the entire nation. It does Iowa, New York, Illinois, you name it, everywhere.
What are the trends you're seeing in alcohol? Is an email. What are you seeing in terms of alcohol consumption nationwide? Celine.
Generally, we're seeing a decrease in alcohol consumption. After COVID and a lot of drinking at home, I think people have felt like they needed to take a step back from that. And it's not just wine. It's also beer, it's spirits, it's all alcohol beverages. And it's happening globally. It's not just something that's happening to us here in the United States. In France, thousands of acres of vines are being pulled out. One of our growers in Washington is pulling out grapes. So it's happening everywhere. And slowly, well, as the younger generation comes on, you know, into drinking age, right now they're tending towards more of the sweet and bubbly drinks. But as time goes, the trend usually follows that there's some interest in wine.
Do you guys make a non-alcoholic wine?
No, we don't. We have a grape juice, but we do not make non-alcoholic wine. It is the only non-alcoholic wine right now coming from Germany or Europe. They are usually white and bubbly. It has been a quality problem to make a great non-alcoholic. You basically have to make a wine, strip the alcohol out, and rebuild the flavor. And it is not up to a winery. Winery do not have the ability to do such thing. You would have to be a manufacturing. You would have to be a bottling plant. They are stuff that you have to put in those wines that I don't think you want to drink. And we are not touching that. We'd rather encourage people to drink lower alcohol wine, like the local that Celine was talking about, which is 8.7% of alcohol. The Prairie Fumé is only 10% of alcohol. Let's try those wines rather than a 14, 15% of alcohol wine. That's the direction we are going.
In another email, Willem and Colfax wondering, now this is about cognac, wonders what kinds of grapes does it take to make cognac, and do you make it, and how does it, and does cognac need to come from a certain region to be called cognac?
Okay, so cognac is only made in the region of France. So that is a quote-unquote protected name, and it can only, if it is called cognac, it can only come from the region of cognac. In cognac, they grow a lot of Uni Blanc grapes. It's a big cluster, lots of volume, and it is grown for its high acidity and low sugar. And our emulation for cognac here in Wisconsin is the Coquard brandy, and as well as the Press House brandy, which is all white grapes picked early. La Crosse is used for us. San Pepin is used. Brianna, all native Wisconsin grapes picked early to have less alcohol, and it makes a finer brandy, which ages in the barrels 2 to 8 years to have the our brandy product.
Yeah, I have a bottle of each out of those at home, as a matter of fact, and they're very, very good brandies for sure. So the trends in Céline and just in general, is what are you seeing?
Since we're seeing less drinking overall, bottle sales everywhere have gone down. But the upside to that is people are really coming out to seek an experience and interact with what we have here, with the vintage winery, with the bistro. So really turning towards food and tasting experiences instead of, you know, taking bottles upon bottles home. And that's okay too, you know, whatever people need to do for their families and just to enjoy themselves in a different way, maybe perceiving it a little bit differently.
You know what? Treble in Lodi has a comment that kind of goes along with what you're talking about here. Treble, thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
And you've got,
you want me?
Yeah, you've got an experience to share.
Yes, I'm somebody that is a wine lover, and I drink wine every day with my food and my family. Over the decades, has always served wine with dinner, and my grandparents lived to be in their 90s, both grandfather and grandmother, and I am recoiled when people talk about wine as just alcohol, and I see it as food, and that was what I wanted to bring up and share and see what your guests felt about that.
Yeah. Well, wine as food.
Wine is food. Wine is history. Wine is culture. Wine is also in the Bible so many thousands of times. Wine is part of life and part of food. I mean, we always encourage to have wine with food and food with wine. You don't have to get very sophisticated in the pairing and, you know, red with red meat, white, and Céline can expand on that because we have a lot of fun mixing and matching and changing and experimenting with different wine and food. But wine and food are the best thing that can happen. Wine gather peoples. Sometimes you don't even need to speak the same language. You bring a bottle of wine and everybody becomes friend. For us, it's really a culture and part of life.
Yeah. Céline, you're nodding in agreement there.
Yeah. For us, you know, wine and food is our family. We never have one without the other. And as winemakers, too, you know, we agree calling wine just alcohol doesn't really do it justice. It starts with the farming in the vineyard. You know, that's an entire year, decades worth of farming for one particular block of vines. And so for us, you know, making wine, we kind of look at it as a time capsule too. So, you know, there was a drought the year my son was born, and we have that vintage and think, oh yeah, this is a lot riper than, you know, the year that my daughter was born when we had a lot of frost and, you know, lost a lot of buds and a lot of fruit for the following season. So for us, it's not just the food and the wine, but also kind of a historical piece for our family, kind of like a family time capsule for every season.
Yeah. So the you mentioned the vines and, you know, various years. How are the vines doing this year?
Really nice. And that's something, you know, we can remind all the listeners that it is time to prune the vines. It is happening right now. We are done with our 30-acre block. Up going above the Dales and further north, you still have another month to do that. The vines are looking good. We are doing lots of different and new things in the vineyard. walking away from commercial herbicides, or less and less. I mean, we've done mulching for 25 years. We are going to experiment with some cocoa disc as a mat underneath the vine to suppress the weeds. We're doing local composted manure instead of the standard NPK. We have a complement of NPK with the manure, but half of the fertilization to the vine will be coming from cow manure. Planting radishes, all sorts of new things. But the vineyard is looking good right now, and we hope for no frost.
Yeah, and by the way, Trouble, thank you very much again for calling. I'm sorry I didn't thank you for that call. Marsha had emailed us. They're located in the Wausau area. They found a wild grapevine growing in their backyard, which faces south and gets full sun, and it seems to be now trying to grow up into a flowering crab tree. How do you figure out what type of grapevine it is? Should they construct something to help the vine flourish? There are also wild raspberry canes in this area.
It's always fun to find a mystery vine. There are a few labs that can identify using DNA. I can look that up, and I can send Larry that, and they can share that to you, Marsha, from your email. Otherwise, if you can look at the shape of the leaves, the size of the leaves, how big the flower clusters are, and then when the fruit comes out, you might be able to get an approximation, but it is probably some wild riparian vine. They're really hard to identify unless you send it in for DNA testing.
I would cut it out. I'd get rid of it. You know, I've tasted some really bad wine from while it just grows as an ivy. It chokes the trees. I would get rid of it.
Oh, there you go, Marsha. And, you know, gardeners, they're always experimenters. They always want to try something. But at least it's only one vine, and you maybe experiment with it and then get rid of it after you taste the grapes. So there you go. Oh, man, you can join in, too, number 800-642-1234. Email to talk@wpr.org. You mentioned pruning. And what are, you know, for those who have grapes, grapevines, it's a good time to be pruning them. What are the tips for pruning the vines?
I think there are two tips. Number one, it's got to be done every year. Learning how to identify last year's growth. And it will be a smooth shoot or a smooth branch without any peeling bark. And you will prune on that. So you will prune with that. And you can leave a lot of little sticks that have two or three buds on with that smooth bark and not the peeling bark. The peeling bark would be 2 years old, 3 years old, and there will be no fruit coming out of those branches. The fruit only comes out of last year's growth. And and I lost the train of thought, but it needs to be done every year. Oh, and you basically have to remove 80% of last year's growth to end up with the appropriate number of buds that will ensure fruit quality, sunlight penetration, and so on.
When it's harvest, here's another question. When it's from an emailer, when it's harvest time, how do you harvest the grapes, Celine?
We have two ways of harvesting. So in the weeks leading up to harvest, once the grapes start changing color on the vine, we'll go through and we will sample every different block for sugar and acid and also taste all the way through. Early on when they're not very ripe, it leads to a lot of stomach aches. So it's always more fun as it gets a little sweeter. Once we see what that is and understand the balance, all of those harvest dates will be planned based on the wine that we want to make from those grapes. So the balance of the sugar and the acid and the alcohol that we want to get from those. So when we're ready to harvest, we will either harvest by hand on all of our steepest slopes, or we have an over-the-row picker that can drive right over the top and has these flexible rods that strip the grapes off the clusters and bring them into a bin that we bring into the winery.
You should talk, Celine, about the, and you mentioned kind of in passing when we were talking about food and wine together, you guys have some fantastic opportunities for people to visit and sample and some lovely food as well, I can attest to.
Thank you. My brother, Roman, our chef, started the bistro 6 years ago, and we have lots of food, flatbreads, soup sandwiches, different salads, wraps, and a brandy old-fashioned cookie, which is really admittedly good. The favorite.
It's really good.
It's fantastic. And lots of homemade breads, always a baguette. There's some wine butter that's fantastic. So we have food from noon to 3 during the winter season. Pretty soon we'll be open from noon to 4:30 in the bistro, the kitchen. Otherwise, we're open from noon to 5. There are tours, tastings. There's a beautiful old historic vintage winery where the bistro is housed, and our cellars are in the basement of that. And then we also have the distillery across the way with cocktails and snacks and some tours and viewing windows so you can see what the guys are up to day to day. And then we have lovely flowers and grounds and a cave up on top of the hill with a view from of the river from the top of the bluff there.
Yeah, it's a beautiful view. It really is. And the food is very good as well. And that's kind of year-round now.
It is year-round. We're only closed Easter, New Year's, Thanksgiving, and Christmas.
Yeah. Jim in Dodge County has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Larry. Thanks very much. Your comments about pruning were spot on. It's exactly the help I needed. My other question is that we've had problems with bug pests. And as you might guess, the Japanese beetle is one of those. And then one year, kind of unusual, and we had been handpicking those beetles, something ate the blossoms before they ever got to go to fruit. And I talked to a local fellow, and he thought, well, maybe that was a flea beetle. Well, at any rate, so we have tried the powders and such on there, and then the only thing that has worked reasonably well was a gauze shield over the top of it, that lightweight gauze. We just make a complete tent over the top of the grapevine, and that stopped the bugs, but I suspect that it's cut down on my yield. It hasn't been very great since then. And so do you suggest that we not do that, or that we only leave it on for a period of time and then take it off?
Yeah.
How many vines do you have, Jim?
Just one.
Okay. So for Japanese beetle, you can buy the commercial lures, and it'll smell like a whole, like you walked into a flower shop, this little lure, and then it funnels the beetles into a bag. That is one way. It's controversial on whether it attracts more beetles to the vine or not. So if you're going to use that, I would put that in an area of the yard that's not too close to that vine. There are also kaolin clay that can be sprayed over the vine that acts as a deterrent to the Japanese beetles against eating the leaves. It kind of irritates them. They don't notice it quite as much, but every time it rains, it needs to be reapplied. And those are just non-chemical ways of doing it. Of course, there are always sprays. If you're going to go that route, you need to make sure you're doing it when the beetles are actually on the vine. So usually the afternoon hours when it's warmest and sunniest, and they're all emerged from the sod underneath the vine. As to the bloom question, I'll let Philippe answer that one.
Yeah, what do you think, Philippe?
Well, I don't think the netting should affect the bloom and the fecundation of the fruit. Because vines, unless they are, what do you know which cultivar they are, Jim?
No, I'm sorry. It was here when we moved in, and we just use it.
Yeah.
We don't have to see.
So, you know, my gut feel is it's a Concord, and it should pollinate by itself. It's maybe more a nutrition issue. What I would do is really encourage you to keep the vines open, what we call combing, removing a few leaves, letting the sun penetrate inside the vine. It dries out the vine. Then you don't have to use a spray. It could be, I think Celine has a couple of ideas.
If it is a Concord, you might want to see how far back you're pruning it. Concord is more fruitful on the fourth through the eighth buds on the cane. So if you prune it back too far, you might not get much fruit on it the way we would prune Foch or St. Pepin, where we're pruning to two or three buds on a cane. The other thing I was thinking, which is something we've started in our vineyard here against Japanese beetle eggs in the sod, is using nematodes that eat chitin, which is part of the little shell of the egg. And you can find nematodes, beneficial nematodes, at garden supply centers if that's something you want to apply, not just beneficial for your vines, but other garden and flower areas as well.
Yeah, and Jim here, he's got one vine, so I wouldn't think it'd be too expensive to have to use those nematodes as well. Jim, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Beyond grapes, John wonders, what other ingredients do you find in wine?
Wow, that's a great question. Wine is 100% grapes. Water is not part of it. Outside of the washing of the tanks, yeast are added. Sugar can be added if needed. Sulfite is always a question. Yes, we do use sulfite, but it is also naturally produced in the soil. Sulfur from the soil becomes sulfites. And wine is, in my opinion, one of those untouched and quite natural product directly from the vine. And sometimes it just let it be and don't mess with it.
We have two guests for you today, Philippe Coquart and Celine Coquart-Leonards, and they are, of course, very active in the Wallersheim wineries. Great to have them with us. You can join in. The number is 800-642-1234 or email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking wine and winemaking and, of course, grapes and dealing with the grapes that you may have in your yard with our guests, Philippe Coquart and Celine Coquart-Leonards from the Wallersheim Winery. And again, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk@wpr.org. Jennifer in Eau Claire emailed us. They have a grape pergola in their yard, and one year the grapes were purple, but last year they were green, and she says all season long, and wonders how can that be.
Too much shade.
Yeah,
too much shade. Those pergola, I mean, they have grape pergola. Table grapes, Concord grapes, vineyard grapes, wine grapes, they have to be pruned every year. You have to allow the sunlight to ripen the grapes. And it would be exactly the same on our vine if we were to not do the combing, leaf removal, optimizing sunlight penetration inside the vine. The red grapes would be white and pink in September. If you have more than three layers of leaves, the grapes will not see the sun. So it's all about creating some holes and letting the sunlight to ripen the grapes.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Renee emailed us. She loves wine, but she gets a headache every time she drinks even one glass. And wonders why the heck that's the case. And she also says that people are friends who have gone to Italy who used to get headaches. When they drink the wine in Italy, they don't get a headache. And Celine, you want to comment?
Yeah, there's a pretty common misconception that headaches are caused by sulfites in wine. And while there are some truly sensitive people that have a sulfite allergy, typically the amount of sulfite in wine is so much lower, like 100 times lower than what you would find on dried fruit, dried apricots, French fries in the freezer section. So it is quite lower. Typically what causes a headache from wine is histamines. And that usually happens with red wines. And red wines are lower in sulfite than white wines typically because of the tannin, but they are higher in histamines because of the yeast and the fermentation process typically. And that usually has something to do with yeast nutrition. So unfortunately, that's not something that you can really tell when you're picking up a bottle of wine. So it's just knowing producers that you like and who doesn't give you a headache, I guess. Of course, there's always the dehydration that comes with that too, but it's typically a histamine reaction.
Jeff in Dodgeville will give you a chance to join in. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. I've got a question. I've heard in the Middle Eastern countries and Eastern Europe, they graft domestic grapes, or in my case, Northern Wisconsin hardy tasty grape to a wild grapevine and get good results. Do you have any experience with that and any recommendations? I'll hang on.
Great question. Yes, grafting has been used for centuries. It is a great tool. One of the main reasons for grafting American rootstock on other cultivar is for the phylloxera resistance, which is an aphid feeding on the roots. Grafting will also help fighting soil salinity, reduce vigor in rich soil. So grafting can be used for many, many things. And we had some grafted vine did extremely well for 30-some years. We ended up pulling this vineyard out, but the first 25 years, it was just lots of vigor and proving that they were that the roots were not sensitive to phylloxera. So it can be done, it's a great tool. So I would encourage you to you could graft a Foch, you could graft a St. Pepin or Lacrosse on a wild rootstock. It can be done.
Is it difficult, the whole grafting process? Probably should get some direction on that.
No, not really, not very difficult. You need a really sharp knife. You create an incision in the part that is going to stay rooted. You insert a stick exactly of the same size, same diameter, and you can wrap it with some kind of tape. And just watch it grow. You might need five trial and two will take, but it certainly can be done.
listener called but couldn't stay with us. She's wondering if your gift shop still sells things made out of wine barrels.
Oh, yes, we do. We have a genius guy on site by the name of Tommy Meyer. He's the one creating the trays, the coat rack, the candle holder, chairs, tables, mini bar made out of barrels that we have used. And after 6-7 years, when we no longer need the barrel, then we retire them. We can stencil a nice distillery logo, Wollershammer Winery logo on them, or we make furniture out of them. So yes, we still have, year-round, we have those objects.
And somebody else is wondering about one of your wines, and what type of wine do you recommend for Easter ham?
We love ham and Easter lamb as well. We often have Pinot Noir with ham, or if you're doing lamb for Easter, it's a great option. If you have any Ruby Novo left from, which is the first wine released of the new vintage, that's a great option. Something like a Beaujolais. So something like a lighter red. Pinot tends to have less tannins, or something that's only been aged in the barrels a few months or not at all. Any of those light reds would be a great option. They're fruity. They're not too tannic, so they won't be too drying. They'll play well with the sweetness of the ham.
I always look forward to the Ruby Novo.
That's, us too.
That is something I look forward to every single year. Well, you know, how's business been? I mean, it's, you know, we talked earlier about some of the problems or some of the changes in people's approaches to wine and other alcohol, for that matter.
You know, Larry, in all honesty and transparency, it's concerning. You know, I mean, I would love to say, oh, it's good. It's okay. And we are not the only one. You know, we see stats throughout Wisconsin. We see stats throughout the nation. Like Celine was explaining, in Washington State, they have pulled 10,000 acres of Cabernet grapes last year. They were requested to pull another 7,000 this year. It's not looking great. And, you know, all the retailers, all the restaurants are concerned. When you have less wine or less cocktail at a restaurant, it's less tips. The bill is a lot smaller. There is good profit on wine and cocktail at restaurants, and it hurts everybody's business. Distributors are concerned. It's affecting a huge segment of the food and wine and beverage population. You know, so we are hoping for a turnaround. We are really encouraging people to support locally made wines. And, you know, it's not a quantity, but it's a quality. We see the price point in the 12 to 20 continuing to do well. The high price point are hurting. So we hope for a better days.
We'll talk with you both again. Thank you so much. Philippe Coquart and Celine Coquart-Lennertz, our guests today from the Wollersheim Winery. And by the way, a full disclosure, we should mention that Wollersheim Winery is one of Wisconsin Public Radio's many business sponsors. And we'll get them back again, and we'll talk more about wines and winemaking with them. Thank you so much for listening, and stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News. I'm Larry Mueller.